Want to know more about what your favorite ninjas have on their minds? Check out the American Ninja Warrior podcast. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, and it's a great listen for any Ninja Warrior fan.
Hello and welcome to Indians on Deck. I'm Matt Schlichting, joined as always by Brian Heminger. Brian, the minor league season has come to a close.
Yeah, it has, and it's been a pretty wild year for Indians minor league teams. So I'm excited to talk about a little bit of a wrap-up as things have come to their conclusion, and just some of the players that maybe excited us or surprised us and maybe disappointed us. So yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. But we will get started, as always, with the top 10 prospects in the system and how they did for the last week of the year. And Nolan Jones went out with a bang, it looks like.
Yeah, which is great. You know, he finished the season with the final week having a 289, 417, 526 slash with a home run, two doubles, and five walks. Well done, Nolan. Finishes the season with a combined high A and double A slash of 272, 409, and 444. So I think what impressed me the most was his slugging percentage went up after moving up to double A. So he was hitting more extra base hits. He ended the season with more home runs at double A than he had at high A, and he was at high A longer. So that's great. Betting average dipped a little bit in double A, but the on-base percentage stayed, over 400, which is huge.
Yeah, and with his patience and his power, average is almost kind of like, eh.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a really great sign. So he really cemented himself as one of the top guys in the Indian system, as the top guy, really. Because as I say all the time, the transition from high A to double A is usually the most jarring for players. And, Nolan Jones really did not see much loss in production whatsoever. So for him to shake that off and cream some home runs, and the ball is not juiced to double A, it's juiced to triple A, but and actually improve his slugging percentage and everything, that's a really good sign to see. So I'm very happy for what we got out of Nolan Jones there in that transition. So next up, how did our boy Tristan McKenzie do? He must have really finished that season strong, right, Matt?
Well, he finished it exactly as strong as he started, which is to say not at all. No baseball from Tristan McKenzie whatsoever this year after either a shoulder or a back or a just not being alive anymore injury. Nobody really knows at this point. We may never hear from him again. Maybe we should do like a special My God, He Lives podcast if we ever see him throwing again.
Yeah, it's just really frustrating because, all we heard was back injury and spring training, and then he never pitched the whole season. So, I mean, you would not think that a simple back injury would be the reason that somebody would miss a whole season. As we mentioned last week, Mike Clevinger had a back injury early in the season, and, he came back and he's, wins pitcher of the month in the American League for August. So, I really wish the Indians, I understand them, wanting to keep this close to the vest, but, something must have happened for him to, have some kind of setback or something in his rehab. Because, he was throwing in June. He was throwing. And then we never heard anything from him again. So, unfortunate. And, this really was just a completely lost year for Tristan McKenzie. His prospect status really took a nosedive this season.
Yeah, because he came in number one overall in the Indian system and ranked pretty highly in most top 100s. And I mean, unless something major changes or we hear something incredibly positive this offseason, I don't see any reason for anyone to include him in a top 100 list for the whole league.
Yeah, I'm wondering what LGT is going to do when we do our top 20 next year. Because we had several players have some breakout seasons, and Tristan was definitely not one of them. So we'll see how much they punish him for not getting to play.
Another player, or this is one that we didn't start the year with, but added along the way, Mr. Logan Allen, and he had a little bit of a nice week to finish the year.
Yeah, he had one game started, six innings pitched, allowed just one run on five hits with six strikeouts and three walks. Definitely, by far, his best start since he's arrived from San Diego. He'd struggled. You know, he definitely has not had a great year. His prospect status also has taken a dip, but that's a great way to close it out, get a little bit of momentum built for next season, because, you know, what he does in this offseason is really going to define him for next year, because, you know, he's going to be competing for that number five spot in the Indians rotation, or four spot, depending on what the Indians do in the offseason. But, I mean, you would have to think that if the Indians don't make any moves and everybody stays healthy, that you've got Bieber, Clevinger, Carrasco, and Kluber as 1-4, 1-4, no matter what. And then everybody, it could be up to 10 guys trying to fight out for that number five spot.
Yeah, it really could.
Logan Allen is
awesome, but.
So next up, how about our boy Tyler Freeman?
He finished off the season with six games in the last week, hit .320, got on base at a .320 clip, and slugged .360.
Golden Oscar.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this last week, but started the season definitely drawing a lot more walks, showing some patience, and then over the last month, that on-base percentage started to get very, very close to the batting average. But he was at least able to add a double and steal a couple of bases in the last week as well.
Yeah, one thing that was kind of a saving grace was he was still getting hit by a lot of pitches, and even that stopped. So I don't know what happened.
And no more free passes. And then our number five man on the totem pole, Mr. Bo Naylor. How was he?
Didn't finish the season super strong. Slashed a 167, 200, 222. BABIP was low. So, you know, just more unlucky than anything. Did hit a double, but yeah, definitely not the greatest finish to a season. But I would say over the last 2 months, he really impressed me. And I'm very happy with what we saw out of him in his debut at full season single A for the whole season. And he proved he belonged, even though the Indians were very aggressive with him. So I'm definitely looking forward to what he does at high A next year.
For sure. And then we have a little bit to talk about him and some of the other catchers in the system later when we get to listener questions, which should be fun. But yeah, I he's one of my favorite prospects now, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do moving forward.
And then how about our boy George Valera, who also was at full season Lake County to close out the season?
I don't know. I just don't know. He had four games, hit .133, .235, .267. There was a triple in there. He also got caught stealing three or two out of the three times he was on base. Not wonderful. Six strikeouts, put his overall line for the year at .217, .336, .411. So not quite the mashing that we had hoped for. But again, this is a very young player who missed a good chunk of last year.
Last year he played like
the dreaded hamate bone injury.
He didn't even play a week. So this is really his first full season playing. And it wasn't even a full. He started halfway through. So I think we're going to learn a lot about George Valera next year, because he's probably going to be starting the season at Lake County. And that means he's going to start right after the Indians start. So we're going to get a full year out of him as long as he stays healthy. And that's exciting. So, and that'll be a huge test, because so far he's spent one season where he played about four or five games. Then this year he was leading the New York Penn League in home runs and then got promoted. Didn't quite hit as high average as we were hoping, but I mean, on base was great. A lot of walks, good slugging for the most part. So I think he'll be in good shape. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does this offseason and then how he responds to his first year of full season baseball, because that's going to be a big test. And I think he'll be maybe 19 or 20 next year. So still very young for his level. And next up, looks like Bobby Bradley had a decent close to the season.
He, in the final week leading up to the playoffs, hit .368, .458, .737. Great. That was with a double, two home runs, four walks, five strikeouts. And it's worth pointing out the Clippers have also started their run for the Governor's Cup in the International League. And Brian, I think it may be related to the name that you've chosen to identify yourself as in Zencaster today. But what did he do last night, even though the Clippers lost?
Bobby Bradley hit one of the hardest home runs I've ever seen in the history of baseball. I mean, I'm not joking. They showed him make contact with the ball, and then they tried to pan to the outfield to watch it leave the park, and it had already bounced off of the brick wall, like at the top of the stadium, and it was already on the ground in the outfield by the time they could even find it. Like, that's how hard he hit that ball. I really, really want to see like some kind of computer system try to estimate what that exit velocity was, because that was absolutely disgusting. And the pitcher's reaction was hilarious. I mean, he's just like, oh my God, what have I done? I need a new profession. Jeez.
And it wasn't really even, it was a ball.
And he just tomahawked. Bam! In slow pitch softball, you know, somebody just lofts one and it's right at your head and you just can't help yourself and just wham! That's exactly what he did. And it just never, I don't know if it ever stopped going up. It was that hard of a line drive. So,
well, my favorite thing about it is it hit in Columbus, they've got that sort of straight up and down deck right up against Nationwide Boulevard there. So there's like three different levels, kind of looks like a Top Golf almost, if you've ever been to one of those, the way it's stacked. But he hit it like a little more than halfway up and the ball just bounced like straight out back into right field and landed like 30 or 40 feet from the wall because of how hard it bounced off. Like, the announcer didn't even have time to make a complete home run call. It was just like, oh, it's gone, I guess, already.
Yeah, I mean, it was insane. So I was super impressed. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that he does. So he's going to be competing for a spot on the Indians roster next season. And, you know, we all know what he needs to do. You know, he needs to, cut down on the strikeouts. If he can at least strike out at a 30% clip at the MLB level, like, he is going to be playing in the major leagues for a long time. But he just has to be able to find, you know, whatever it is where he's not sacrificing the power, but just improving that eye a little bit at the plate and just not swinging at pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at.
Unless he blasts them like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because I there's nothing I love better than seeing a guy swinging a pitch out of the zone and hit it out of the park. But I think what he really needs to focus on, I think he should do something with Carlos Santana, because, you know, Santana does such a tremendous job of not swinging the balls out of the zone. And if he can add that part to his game a little bit, you know, that'll make him that much more dangerous. Because, you know, Santana's out there hitting 30 plus home runs and he's striking out, you know, one of the lower rates in the Indians.
Yeah, going to hit 100 walks again this year.
Mm-hmm. I'm not expecting Bobby Bradley to walk at a Santana clip, but I would just love for him to be a little bit more selective. Just see if he can pick up the ball a little bit better and try to not swing at those pitches that major league pitchers are going to try to get him to swing at that look like strikes and are not.
Well, moving along, we come to Ethan Hankins, who had one last start to finish the season.
You know, he'd struggled a little bit, not terribly, but, you know, it was a transition. He got promoted from Mahoning Valley to Lake County, full season ball. And in his final start of the season, I think, was his most impressive. He'd had multiple starts this year where he went four innings and did not give up a run, or four innings and he had one where he did not give up a hit or a couple times. But this one was, I think, the most impressive. Even though he gave up a hit, he went four innings, one run on two hits with two walks, and he struck out 10. That is ridiculous. I mean, he only had 12 outs, and 10 of them were strikeouts. So, you know, that's the pitcher that fans are excited about. Like, that's the thing that he brings to the table. He has just such a filthy fastball that is so hard to pick up on. It has, you know, a lot of movement. And the fact that he moved up a level and they still can't hit it, that's a really, really good sign. So I'm very excited. I'm not joking. Ethan Hankins might be the player that I'm most excited about how he performed this year in the Indian system, because everybody was wondering, you know, because he didn't pitch much at all after they drafted him last year. But this year, you know, he got the chance to really show what he can do. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him for a full season next year and getting stretched out a little bit to more five innings, six innings. You know, how's this guy's stamina? You know, could this guy strike out 15? You know, it could happen. If, you know, if he could strike out 10 in four, he could definitely strike out 15 in six or seven innings. So I'm through the roof with my hype on Ethan Hankins. So it could not have gone any better, his debut. Like, we were hyping it up, waiting, like, come on, it's coming, guys. You know, he's in the top 10. He hasn't played these first 2 months, but when he pitches, it's going to be good. And I think he outdid my expectations for him. On the season overall, he ended with a 2.55 ERA, averaged over 10.5 strikeouts per nine innings. The only thing that's a little, you know, cause him for concern, you know, he did have 4.5 walks per nine innings. But I think overall, though, his control seemed good. He just had a couple rough outings where he walked a lot, and I think that kind of skewed it. So, but I mean, if he's whiffing guys at that rate, you're not going to be too scared about it, because I mean, James Karinchak has, you know, similar issues where he walks some guys, but if he's striking out almost every other batter that he doesn't walk,
if the only guys that get on base are the few that you walk, no big deal. That brings us along to Daniel Espino, who finished up his first year in the system. Yeah, he had that one last start and pitched three innings, ended up giving up three runs on four hits, partially because of three additional walks, but he still struck out six guys. So I guess I'm satisfied with what we were able to see from him this year. Coming in as a high school arm just earlier this year and only having 23 2/3 innings to show what he's got, I am satisfied so far, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he develops.
Yeah, I mean, striking out almost 13 batters per nine innings, that's pretty good. And I think what I like the most about Espino is, you know, a lot of times the Indians will draft a kid, and then he'll maybe get to start like one or two times, and then they'll just expect him to go to Mahoning Valley the next season. But he pitched consistently, you know, three inning outings, and was blowing people away, and they liked him so much they promoted him to Mahoning Valley. So that's really, really good sign. And that's something that you can build on for next year. Like, if he has a really good offseason and impresses the Indians staff in spring training, you know, during the minor league spring training, there's a possibility. It's not a guarantee or anything, but there's a slim possibility that this could be his only stint at Mahoning Valley. I mean, he was the Indians' first round pick this year. And last year's first round pick started this year at full season with Bo Naylor. They could do that. Just imagine if Ethan Hankins and Daniel Espino are in the same rotation at like Lake County next year. It'd be pretty fun. I like imagining it. I mean, it's not a guarantee, obviously. He only pitched about three times with Mahoning Valley. But if the Indians feel that his development is ready for a full season, then that could be really, really exciting. So it's something to dream on for next year. So there's a lot that has to happen first, but yeah, there's a lot to like right now with some really impressive young arms.
And I almost wonder if with a guy who has as good a fastball as Espino does and really good strikeout stuff, obviously, if he's striking out 13 guys per nine, I almost wonder if you can't really start to work on control and command until you start going up some higher levels. Because if you can just walk a couple guys but strike everyone else out, you almost don't need to learn how to work around it, I guess. So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing him get challenged more, too, because he was not getting challenged in the Arizona Rookie League at all.
Last but not least, Brian Rocchio.
Yep. Rocchio, you know, did not have the strongest finish to the season that last week, six games, slashed 174, 208, 304. Did hit a home run, which is great, and then had a walk and four strikeouts. So nothing real crazy to close out the season, but I'll take it. Overall on the year, he slashed 250, 310, 373 in his first taste of low A baseball. I was hoping it'd be a little bit better than that, but you know, it's definitely not super underwhelming. So it shouldn't be more than enough to earn him an opportunity to play for full season Lake County next year. So just like Valera, we'll get a full season out of Brian Rocchio next year, and that's definitely something to be excited about. Now, moving on, looks like we've got our five best from everywhere. So looks like we have a familiar name with a famous mom as one of our top
candidates. It is Mr. Brock Hartson. He pitched for, he had 7 innings pitched, only gave up 1 hit, no runs, earned or otherwise, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, and that was on 87 total pitches. So he was smoking.
Check out the American Ninja Warrior podcast for a behind-the-scenes look at all the action of the show and more with your favorite competitors. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And, Brock is, he's an interesting case because, he was in the Indian system. He was doing pretty well. Then he retires after some injuries. And then he comes out of retirement this season and finished the season strong. And now they're sending him to the Arizona Fall League.
It is pretty funny that he's just quit baseball, comes back, and a couple weeks later is like, actually, no, I can throw a Maddox, yeah. No problem.
So that was great. So I'm very happy for him. So I hope that he can keep going because, he's at least AA worthy right now, in my opinion. And that means, he's not too far away from contending for a spot in the Indians rotation.
Yeah, and it's just cool that they basically got him again for free this year, just showing back
kind
up.
He needed it after, some of the other top prospects in the Indian system were injured or, underperformed in pitching, at least with, McKenzie, with Oviedo, with Gene Carlos Mejia. So, this was a really nice thing to have.
The next guy that we have in the top five is Mr. Jose Fermin.
Yeah, and Fermin finished the season real strong. Ended up with a 333, 405, 515, 5 stolen bases, which is just nasty. And he was really good for over a month to close out the season. He also was the Midwest League Player of the Week as well. So, he had a really strong close to the season. And what's really interesting is he's actually going to be Rule 5 eligible, I believe.
Oh.
Because he had an injury that slowed his development earlier in his career. But, this is a guy with a great eye at the plate, good bat-to-ball skills, good defense. So the Indians might have to make a tough decision. I mean, I'm hoping that no one would take him if he hasn't even been to High A yet. But I'm not 100% sure he's Rule 5 eligible, but I think I saw somewhere that he might be.
Yeah, it would be really frustrating if someone takes him when he's still at just regular Class A. It would just, I would think, napalm their development.
And then you wouldn't happen to have the stats for our next player, would you? It looked like they're not on there, but we can skip ahead. And then
I actually have them up here in front of me.
I will let you go.
And
who's our
being
next
able to,
five best?
We went ahead and picked Eli Lingos for the last 2 starts that he made during the regular season. He ended up going 6 innings total in each of them, allowing only 4 hits in both of those. 2 earned runs in the first, only 1 earned run in the second, 1 walk each in each of them, and ended up striking out 7 and 5, respectively. And that concluded a march for him where, at the beginning of August, he had a 4.46 ERA, and by the time he finished the month of August, he was sitting at 3.66. So a really, really strong finish to the year. Didn't have any starts in August with fewer than 5 innings pitched. And except for the very first one, he had either 2, 1, or 0 runs earned for that stretch. So just a really, really excellent finish. Unfortunately, he did pitch last night in an elimination game and got tagged for 4 runs in 4 innings. But that's
count.
Not the regular
that's
season.
Starts don't count.
It doesn't count. And that brings us to Mr. Michael Peoples. We've got another pitcher. I think this is the first time we've had 3 pitchers in the 5 best.
And, this is a guy that's been in the Indian system for a really long time, a veteran of the system. He's kind of been in that AA, AAA area for the last few seasons now. But he's just really been dependable. And he had an incredible finish to this season with 6 innings pitched in his start, allowed just 1 hit, no walks, no runs, 7 strikeouts. And then over the whole last month, he had 6 starts with a 2.22 ERA, 36 strikeouts, and just 4 walks. I mean, that's Bieber-esque.
It's yeah. Bieberish.
Yeah, Bieberish.
Bieber.
So, yeah, great job, Michael Peoples. You know, he's another guy, you know. Obviously, he's not going to be at the top of the list, but he could be contending for a spot in the Indians rotation next spring because, you know, this is a guy that throws strikes, and when he hits his spots, he can be tough to hit. So, you know, he's not some super flamethrower, but just another good, solid, dependable arm at the top of the Indians minor league system. And then, obviously, I think we may have already mentioned this man before, but...
I mean, the numbers are good enough on their own, but I feel like even if he had just hit that one home run last night, I'd have to put him here just for that.
Yeah. Again, you know, playoffs don't matter, but that one like transcended playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's kind of like the Austin Jackson catch in that game from a couple of years ago where the Indians lost, but that's the only thing anyone remembers from the game. So last night, like, sure, the Clippers lose, but Bobby Bradley.
Yeah, did you see what he did to that poor baseball? Bomb. All right.
So that moves us along to transactions, which there weren't really a ton of here in the last week.
Last week, transactions are typically pretty low key. Obviously, you had the Tyler Naquin injury, so the Indians called up Jake Bowers. They also called up, you know, Eric Haas, Ryan Flaherty, maybe a pitcher or two. So nothing too crazy there for the September call-ups. And then to fill some space, Ryan Lavernway was signed at the AAA level. And then he had a couple depth guys. Connor Smith was promoted to AA to end up to close out the season. And Henry Pujols was promoted to High A from Mahoning Valley. So nothing too crazy there in transactions. Actually had nobody get hurt the last week of the season, which is always nice. I think at this point, I want to talk a little bit about how each team did in the Indian system since the regular season is over for all levels. So we're going to start in the DSL, which was interesting. The Indians had two teams, well, 1.5 teams. They're the DSL Indians, and then there's the DSL Indians Brewers. And they were last and second to last in the DSL North Division.
Maybe one team would have been better.
The Indians Brewers went 17-52. They were the worst team in the whole DSL by a pretty wide margin. But again, you know, that's kind of where the Indians, really the only good player on the Indians Brewers was Junior San Quentin. You know, the Indians just needed a spot to have, they had 3 very good shortstop prospects and they weren't going to let them all, you know, split time on one team. So they had San Quentin on the Indians Brewers, and then they had Angel Martinez and Gabriel Rodriguez on the DSL Indians. And then when Rodriguez got promoted to the AZL, they sent San Quentin to the Indians, to the DSL Indians. So the Indians Brewers got even worse. and then the DSL Indians went 26-41. Offensively, they were actually pretty good. And at one point in the season, I think this was over a month into the season, they had walked more than they struck out. So like they were very exciting offensively, but they had almost 0 pitching prospects at that level. So, you know, they're not going to win a lot of not going to win a lot of games when you're giving up a lot of runs. I mean, there honestly were almost nothing there. So pitching wise, offensively, it was a good season. They had a couple players make it to the AZL and get promoted. Not just Gabriel Rodriguez, had a catcher, I think Shane Paz. And so, you know, it was a fun season, but, you know, obviously nothing that impressive. So it was more about giving the position players an opportunity to develop. In the Arizona League, though, there was a lot of excitement for the Indians. Indians last year had 2 of the best teams in the Arizona Rookie League. They both made the playoffs. And this year they had 2 other very good teams. There were the Indians Red and the Indians Blue. The Indians Red was primarily composed of like high school and college players from the Indians draft. And the Indians Blue was primarily composed of international players, but it also had pitchers from like the Indians draft. So they kind of split up the pitchers and position players. So the Indians Red went 27-29. So they had a pretty decent season, had several good players. Indians Blue, however, they made it to the playoffs. They went 35-21. They were one of the best teams in all the AZL. And Aaron Bracco was a very big standout. He was, if you remember, you know, one of the top international signings of the year. They got, you know, George Valera and Brian Rocchio. Aaron Bracco was the player that actually got signed for the biggest bonus that year. And this was his first season after missing all of last year with an injury. And he was tremendous. He was their best player. And he ended up getting promoted to Mahoning Valley right in time for the AZL Indians Blue to make it, to make their playoff run. So that was a bit unfair, but Indians Blue ended up losing. They made it to the championship game series. They won their first game in the playoffs. They faced a team that was pretty good, and they beat them like 10-1. And then they, in a best 2 out of 3 championship series, they lost both games. So, but to make it to the championship is pretty impressive. So good job. Great job by the AZL Indians Blue. But yeah. And then I apologize for the typing. I did not have every single league that the Indians played in the standings. But moving on up, the final short season team that the Indians had was the Mahoning Valley Scrappers, who I think possibly had the most hype of any team in the Indian system. And they lived up to it for the most part, but I think what was disappointing was there was some inconsistent offense. Obviously, you know, you had George Valera being one of the top home run hitters in the league, but, you know, several other players, you know, just didn't quite have the offensive seasons we were hoping for. You know, Rocchio, you know, batted 250, nothing real crazy there. Delgado was good. Yeah, it was a very young team. I mean, it is literally, I'd say more than half the team was under 20 years old, so... they just didn't quite live up to the expectations, but again, that's tough when you got so many good young kids on a team like that. So, they finished the season 37-39. They just missed the playoffs, in the last week. So, and they still had a good year, but just, it wasn't quite up to the expectations. I think I was hoping that they would have a winning record and be in the playoffs, but didn't quite happen. But then, I think a surprise team was Lake County.
And as we mentioned, their season sadly came to an end close to the championship round, but they ended up putting together a nice year.
Basically, in the first half, they qualified for the playoffs by going 40-29. And overall on the season, they finished 74-64. So basically in the first half, they had Will Benson, you know, being king of the world and Tyler Freeman being a god. So that was really, really amazing. But then in the second half with those guys promoted to high A, they weren't quite as good, but I mean, they were still strong and they still had a good run. Jose Fermin was very good down the stretch. They also lost one of their best players to a trade. Ruben Cardenas was one of their middle of the order bats. And he was traded in, what trade was that? Where we got, who did we get in the Ruben Cardenas deal?
It was, I can't even remember. Too long ago for me.
Might have been Hunter, no, was it Hunter Wood? All right, he's got some more Thunder typing here, but yeah, it was the Christian Arroyo Hunter Wood trade. So they got, you know, a guy that immediately could help him in the bullpen and a guy that could compete for the second base position next year. That's likely going to be open. And they gave up a middle of the order bat at full season, like single A Lake County. But yeah, so Lake County had a good season. I think pitching ended up being a strength. They had several really good performers there. And I was, you know, impressed with what they were able to do overall. It was just a fun year. And I think people did not expect them to be that good this year. So that, at the beginning of the year, they had a really, really nasty infield. I mean, it had two top international signings and I think three former first round picks all like on that team. I mean, just, it was a really impressive team. So yeah, I was pleased with how that season finished. But then moving on, we have Lynchburg, which was in the High A Carolina League. And this one was a little sad. They finished the year at 62-73, so not quite what they were hoping. And they missed the playoffs for the first time in 7 years. So, but overall, they still had a pretty good season. They just, you know, Lake County was not a great team last year. And basically, Lynchburg was Lake County from last year. But then they added a couple more studs, like in Benson and Freeman. And while Freeman played pretty well at High A, Benson had his struggles. So, you know, he's the kind of guy that, you know, needs a little bit extra time to really learn and develop at each level. So, but then Akron, that one, I'd say out of all the seasons that I was excited about, I think Akron might have had the most disappointing.
Which, yeah, I agree. But one of my favorite statistics in all of Indians minor league baseball is that Kai Tom led the Akron Rubber Ducks with 14 home runs.
He was not on the team for half the years.
He got promoted like 2.5 yep. months ago.
So Akron finished the year overall 61-79. You know, at the beginning of the year, they were kind of a 500 team, and then they went on a horrific losing streak at one point. I think it was over 10 games, it might have been. So just a tough stretch there for Akron. What really hurt Akron was every time they had a pitcher that was doing good, they'd get promoted. You know, they started the year with Zach Plesac, who was unbelievable, and then Plesac doesn't just get promoted to AAA, he gets promoted to the Indians and finishes the whole season with the Indians. Then they're like, okay, well, you know, Aaron Savali is finally ready to start pitching for us. He's you know, he's been hurt for the first month and a half or so, and then Savali's unbelievable, and then he gets promoted to AAA and then to Cleveland. I mean, it was just unfair almost that they were in that type of situation. And then Eli Morgan was so good in the first, you know, half of the season, but then he really struggled down the stretch as well. So, you know, they just, it didn't quite come together for him. You know, the players that were playing good got promoted, like Daniel Johnson and Kai Tom, their best players. And then, and obviously their best pitchers as well. So just, they were kind of the in-between team, it seemed like, this year. So really the only stud that they finished with was Nolan Jones, who did finish the season strong, but I mean,
yes,
not
but,
enough.
I mean, by that point, I mean, you can't blame them for having four or five guys that quickly promoted themselves out of there.
And then closing it out, the Columbus Clippers were tremendous this year. They finished the year 81-59, first place in the West Division of the International League, finished the year on a 5-game winning streak, and they are also, obviously right now, one win away from competing for the Governor's Cup. So very exciting. I think that right now they're up 2-1 in their clash. So if they win this, then they move on to the championship. So keep it up, Clippers. And I think that closes it out for how the Indians teams did. I'm going to go into more depth with some articles on all of these teams. It's tough to keep track, though, with promotions. You really got to factor in how long these guys were there, what kind of impact they had. So, you know, there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of change that goes on in a minor league season. I mean, even the major leagues. I mean, the Indians, I think, only have 10 players on their current roster that were on the starting 25 on opening day.
That's just ridiculous.
I mean, maybe it's 11 now since Carrasco's been activated, but yeah. No Max Moroffs and Eric Stamets on the Indians right now.
You know, when you mentioned the fact that they were on the opening day roster, I do feel a little bit better about where they are now. Hate to say it, but switching gears entirely, we have our last edition of Indians in the cupboard for this season. And these are a hitter and pitcher each that we decide to highlight that are outside of the top 10, but we think are people that maybe deserve a little bit more attention than they're getting, or they're just too much fun to not talk about. So my pitcher, still have Kyle Nelson. I've had him for, I think, 2 months now, but he ended up finishing the season with 47 innings pitched, 69 strikeouts. Nice. Only 14 walks and a 2.28 ERA. A really nice year. And he's still a pretty under the radar guy, especially in a season, I think, when the Indians had so many relievers in the minors that pitched really well. And a guy like Karinchak, who's striking out 38 batters per nine still. This Nelson's a player that went from high A at the start of the year and finished with the Clippers. And depending on what the Indians decide to do with their bullpen, he could be in the conversation to be one of the arms that they either take out of spring training or pretty early on get a look at due to injuries or needing a 26th man for a doubleheader or something like that.
There's going to be a stiff competition for that Indians bullpen job next year. I mean, real stiff, because you know the Indians bullpen has been good this year and it's kind of been buoyed by some players having above average seasons. But you know, you have some serious prospect talent coming up at that AAA level that are ready. You know, with Sandlin and Karinchak and Nelson, and Cameron Hill, Henry Martinez. I mean, this is an exciting time for the future of the Indians bullpen. So definitely don't blink. There's going to be a lot of strikeouts coming to the major leagues very soon. How about your boy Yainer?
And then for my hitter, Yainer Diaz finished with 341, 364, 5-12. Interesting year to talk about, because that was his overall slash line for the season. His last seven games, he hit 185, 185, 222. He dominated the rookie league, which I think it was his third year in a row starting there. So good. You kind of hoped that he would. And he earned a promotion to low A pretty quickly and got 140 plate appearances there. Ended up slashing 274, 293, 393. So not quite as effective. Still great contact skills, but it'll be interesting to see how he continues to develop seeing the ball, if he can get a little bit more patient, or, I mean, I guess it doesn't hurt to have a catcher who's going to hit 280 or something with pretty good defensive skills, regardless of how often he gets on base, as long as he's got some power. Brian, how did your cupboard end the year?
Neither guy really finished strong. We had Oscar Gonzalez went 111, 200, 111, which is shocking because he is known for never walking, and he walked twice. So even though he had a really bad BABIP, tough luck to close out the year off with his hitting, he did get promoted to Double A to close out the year. So and ended the year with a pretty nice slash, 293, 315, 418. So yeah, I'm definitely pleased, and that's something that should open some eyes of Indians people in the brass. And my boy Kurt McCarty did not finish the year strong. Last start, he went 3 2/3, 9 hits. Ouch. Gave up 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. So not quite the way I was hoping he would finish the year, but I'll take it. And I was hoping maybe they'll give him a shot in the fall league. But
and one more thing about Oscar Gonzalez. He had, I think, one of my favorite moments of the entire minor league season, in which he finally drew his first walk.
It was like a month
and
a half into the year.
And then, if I remember correctly, the teammates like asked for the ball and gave it to him, right?
The whole team signed the ball. It was on Snapchat or something. So, but yeah, just like a player getting their first hit in the major leagues, they actually got the ball back. Like, I'm sure the pitcher was like, what? But I think one of my favorite things was, it was a post from one of his teammates, was after seeing so many times him swinging and lacing a single on a 3-0 pitch, he finally did it. So there must have been so many times where he had a pitcher that just could not throw a strike and he didn't care.
Slap it anyway.
Yep.
And to finish things off this week, we do have a couple of questions. First off, from @DreamingBaseball on Twitter, which are the most intriguing players I should expect to see on the captain's roster when the 2020 season begins?
I would definitely say Ethan Hankins I would expect to start. I mean, you don't know for sure, because like when the Indians were really aggressive with Tristan McKenzie, he was unstoppable at Mahoning Valley. He got promoted to Lake County for a couple starts, and then they had him start the next year at Carolina League, high A, and he was pitcher of the year. I mean, that's where all the hype came from. So Hankins potentially could be on that same path, but if they're conservative, he'll definitely be a stud pitcher on that team. Carlos Vargas, definitely somebody to be excited about. He had some very strong starts this year, and he also throws 100 miles an hour. Potentially, Espino could be on that rotation. I mean, you've got some really, really exciting players. Hunter Gaddis, I'm almost certain, will be in that rotation. He was, I believe, the Indians' fifth-round pick, and he got promoted to Mahoning Valley. And, you know, they weren't stretching him out, even though he was a starter at college. I don't think he ever pitched more than three innings, but he'll be stretched out next year, and he'll be a starter at Lake County for sure. And he is just a filthy strikeout artist with an advanced ability just from his extra years that he's pitched in college. So there's a lot to like about that potential rotation at Lake County. And then offensively, you're probably going to be having, you know, Rocchio, Delgado, Valera, you know, just potentially Aaron Bracco, or who are some other ones? Yeah, LaVistada, Yainer Diaz, Corey Holland is another exciting outfield prospect. I mean, there's a lot of talent. Michael Cooper is a first base prospect to keep an eye on. Skinny as a rail, the skinniest first baseman you've ever seen in your life, by the way. But potential to really, you know, as he starts to fill out, very young player, could become really nasty. So there's a lot of young talent. I mean, it's going to be one of the youngest Lake County teams they've ever had. So definitely an exciting time to be paying attention. Yeah. So, I mean, there's going to be some players that make a huge leap next year, and I would not be shocked if several.
And then our second question from Ghost in the Shell on Twitter. Do you guys think Eric Haas, Lee Jen Chu, Bo Naylor, Yainer Diaz, and Brian LaVistada could change the common perception throughout the Indians' blogosphere that there's a lack of catching depth in the farm system? And I wasn't aware that there was a feeling that there was depth missing, other than maybe people still being sad that we traded Francisco Mejia, although maybe we should be less sad about that as time goes by.
I think that was clearly the right choice. Mejia still has not established himself with the Padres. And then Eric Haas is somebody that I think will absolutely be competing for that backup role next year behind Perez. Lai Jin Chu is a pretty good offensive catcher, but I don't know if he'll be able to stick as a defensive catcher, but he'll probably be playing AAA next year. Bo Naylor was excellent this year, really turned it on in the second half of the season. I was very pleased with him. He's definitely a top five Indians prospect, in my opinion, and he'll be at high A next year. Yainer Diaz, you know, just keeps hitting, so potentially could be at single A next year, and LaVistada also should be at full season next year, so... Yeah, there's a lot of decent catching prospects. And don't forget, you've still got guys like Mike Rivera and Logan Ice, who aren't known as offensive catchers, but are good, you know, game managers. So, you know, there's a lot of decent catchers in the Indian system. And I think that they'll be in really good shape moving forward.
Yeah, I wonder if it's sort of a lack of perception that outside of Naylor, there's anyone that is, there's no sure thing when it comes to prospects, but someone that, should things continue, you will see him on a major league roster playing a significant role.
I think
so. Maybe it's just that people aren't sure.
I think LaVistada and Yainer potentially could be major league catchers if they keep it up. Offensively, you know, a lot of times catchers don't really hit that next level until, you know, they're known for being slow developers. You know, look at a guy like Travis d'Arnaud over in Tampa Bay. Like, finally had his breakout season, and he's what, 28? So, you know, it happens late for some guys. Eric Haas didn't really turn into a decent prospect in the Indian system until he was like 24. So to have somebody that we drafted out of high school, basically, and Bo Naylor be a stud catching prospect, that's exciting right now. And then to have also some young guys like Yainer and LaVistada, who I think LaVistada was drafted out of junior college or community college. So he was able to get drafted like a year earlier than like regular college players. So, you know, we do have some really good depth right now. So yeah, the Indian system is strong at catching. I mean, it's not strong in terms of elite prospects. It's really Naylor at the top, and then Haas is, you know, fringe in the 20s. But there's definitely some solid depth there. Guys that can get the job done, guys that can hit. And, you know, if you look at their defensive stats, they're actually throwing out a pretty decent rate of potential would-be base stealers.
Yeah. Well, with that, I believe we have reached the end of our regularly scheduled Indians on Deck podcasts for this year. Although I do expect, pending any trades that happen in the system or after the Rule 5 draft and winter meetings and such, I think it would be good to reconvene and talk about any changes to the shape of the system at that time. But I want to thank everyone who has joined us along the way and listened to us talk your ear off about these prospects. Hope you had fun. We sure did. Brian, anything that you've got here to end the year?
I do have a couple articles in the works, so keep an eye out for those. You know, I always try to do like a prospect rankings update after, you know, MLB pipeline, after the trade deadline and everything. And I've had something sitting in the back end of the Indians site for like a month now. So I finally have time to finish it. So that should be coming soon. And then I will be trying to do these end of the year recaps for each team. And then I might do something like, you know, players that, you know, broke out, players that disappointed type of article as well. I think that that's something that people are always interested to see, who, you know, who turned the corner as a prospect, or who maybe, you know, brought back, or maybe even a former prospect that finally figured it out, like a Juan Hillman or something. So, you know, there's a lot to dig into based on this system, because, you know, there's a lot of teams, and most people you talk to, they don't even realize even close to how many levels and players are in a minor league system. So yeah, there's a lot to take in, and then we'll see what I can find from digging through all the numbers and everything.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see what you come up with. Well, hey, thanks again, everyone. Let's hope the Indians give us something fun to watch in October.